If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
You were mentioning like AI tools, and I was wondering if you've seen, especially maybe like as more recently, any sort of retractions related to the usage of those tools, and has it kind of opened up like this new category of retractions, if you will?
Absolutely. We've seen retractions of AI papers about AI because they were made by AI. So it gets pretty meta pretty quickly. So AI is a serious problem. This is a reference that may go over the heads of your listeners, but there was a comedian named Stephen Wright who was famous for the sort of one-liner, and he once said, "I want to get a humidifier and a dehumidifier and put them in the same room and have them duke it out." And this is what we're seeing now, or we will see soon. We'll have papers generated by AI, and we'll have AI tools designed to detect the use of AI, and whichever is more sophisticated at the time will win. And then we'll have to change and make it better. But editors are being flooded with AI generated papers. Now, they're not all completely generated by AI. Some of them are just written by AI, but the data are okay. So that's a different story, sort of. Some of them that the data are not good and the paper is generated by AI and maybe the researcher isn't even real. Like, you know, so that does happen.
Should we judge like these papers who do get retracted because of mistakes from AI? Should we judge them differently than somebody like you were describing earlier, Scott Rubin, or do we kind of just treat all retractions the same?
Yeah, so that's a really important question. And it's one that I think ethicists sort of struggle with. But in this case, I would say you have classes of retractions, right? So the sort of Scott Rubin major fraudster papers are the category of, you know, look at maybe to sort of understand what went wrong or what can go wrong or how people can game the system, but don't cite them. Don't, you know, they're not, don't forget they exist, but like the science in there, forget it. Then you have papers that are retracted because maybe there was an ethical problem. Like maybe you had a patient or a group of patients who didn't have proper informed consent, or maybe the researchers didn't get permission from an institution or a drug company to publish those data. But the science is fine, right? And we've seen this. For example, there's a fellow, named Don Mariski, who had developed what was called the Mariski Medication Adherence Survey, I think. I forget exactly what it was. MMAS, it was 4 and then 8 questions. And it was supposed to, you know, give you a sense of how likely a patient was to adhere to a drug regimen. And he had really onerous permissions, copyright issues, requirements for that tool. And would demand that researchers sort of in a post hoc basis pay up if they hadn't gotten permission from him or be forced to retract their paper. Well, that's a different story, like whether that's just greedy as hell and, you know, awful behavior, or whether it's acceptable, then we can debate that. But the point that I'm trying to make here is it doesn't negate the scientific validity of the study, if the guy who owns the tool says, you didn't pay me enough, you have to retract it, right? So put that in that category. Then there are people, for example, like Nobel laureates, who retract their work for whatever reason, error, right? Usually it's error, it's not fraud. So I've always, in our, I can think of no fraudster Nobel laureate at this point. So what do you do with that knowledge? This person clearly won a Nobel Prize, which means that their work was esteemed by not only their colleagues in the science community, but the Nobel Committee. So if a Nobel list retracts, doesn't that send a signal that the work that they continue to put out, that they don't retract, is really trustworthy? And so what you end up seeing actually are that there's some data which show that people who retract and say why they're doing it for an honest reason, an honest error, end up reaping what's called like a trust dividend in their future, in the citations of their future work. So some evidence that we're seeing that the scientific community appreciates the difference for why retractions happen. Like if you retract for fraud, future citations fall through the roof, fall through the floor. No one's likely to cite your work again. And, but if you retract for honest error, you're sending a signal of that your future studies have been double checked and, you know, checked again, and they're reliable. So that was a long way of answering that question, and I'm sorry I rambled, but there's a lot to unpack. And so, you know, this is basically what we've done this for 15 years. We could talk about it for 15 more. Right? So it's really interesting stuff, and it's not a science, obviously. It is about science, but there isn't a science for